Hi, this is Rini Primeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, telling you to stay tuned to WNJC 1360 AM for Thursday in the Doghouse, coming right up.
Mama was a mutt, Daddy was one too. Me, I'm a little bit of everything, everything that I use. One day I'm walking down my block.
Good morning, listeners. Welcome to this week's edition of Thursday in the Doghouse. I'm your host, Rini Primeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer. My co-host, Karen Fazio, owner of My Best Friend Dog School and the dog Super Nanny, couldn't be with us this morning. She had to rush her dad to the hospital last night, and I just want to send our thoughts and prayers out to her this morning. Thursday in the Doghouse is a radio show created just for you, the dog-owning community, to provide educational programs to help you understand your dog, what makes your dog tick, and how to solve behavior problems if they should come up. We talk to veterinarians to learn more about canine health issues. We talk to authors who write all about topics concerning dogs. We talk to shelter and rescue workers, breeders, and other dog trainers all over the country. I want to remind all of you that if you want to hear any of our past programs, or if you'd like to hear today's program again, you can always listen to our podcasts by visiting my website, www.jerseydogtrainer.com, and you can go to Karen's website, too, and that's www.mybestfrienddogschool.com. I promise that each program that we've done is worth listening to more than once. We're here every Thursday morning from 10 to 10:30 right here on WNJC 1360 AM. I am so pleased and honored to have as our guest today Dr. Patricia McConnell, a very well-known and highly respected certified applied animal behaviorist who is recognized worldwide as an expert on canine and feline behavior and dog training. Dr. McConnell has written many wonderful and much acclaimed books, including The Other End of the Leash, For the Love of a Dog, Understanding Emotions in You and Your Best Friend, and Tales of Two Species. She has a new book out now, co-authored by Dr. Karen London, called Love Has No Age Limit, Welcoming an Adopted Dog into Your Home. We'll talk more about her new book later in the show. I've read many of Dr. McConnell's books, and would recommend every one of them to you if you live with and love dogs. We're going to be talking this morning about dogs who are extremely reactive when they see other dogs, but they haven't actually bitten anyone. Thank God. If your dog behaves like this, you definitely want to listen this morning. Good morning, Patricia.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us in the Doghouse today. I know you've done seminars about this very same subject that we'll be talking about today. It can be a real problem for dog owners.
So it can, and I've had to deal with it myself.
Is that right?
The dog I have now actually came amazingly as a puppy, very, very dog reactive. And so I used a lot of the methods we'll be talking about today, and he's doing great, but boy, do I know what it feels like to be walking down the street and see another dog and think, oh, no, instead of, oh, boy.
Yeah, wow, I'm surprised to hear that. So how old was the puppy when you saw this?
He was a baby. He was at 8.5 weeks old. He was terrified of just the sound of another dog or the scent of another dog. It was almost pathological. I've rarely seen anything like it in 23 years.
Wow.
So he was my project. I took everything I'd learned in 23 years to work on him, and he's doing great now. You would not know. I mean, he just ran into a dog. He's in physical therapy right now. He saw a big Rottweiler female in the lobby, and he was just like, ooh, I'd love to see her.
Wow.
So, this is often a treatable problem. Of course, nothing is always treatable for every dog, but this is often a very treatable problem.
Well, good. All right, so my first question is we use the term reactive as opposed to the word or the term aggressive with this problem, and can you kind of tell us what the difference is? What does the term reactive mean versus aggressive?
Reactive is a bigger umbrella, and you know, we used to call all dogs who were sort of problematic on a leash, they'd see another dog and they'd bark and lunge towards it, and we used to call all of those dogs aggressive, and really that wasn't accurate, because so many, you know, some dogs who are barking and lunging and making fools of themselves, and sometimes it feels like making fools of us as owners,
right,
are doing it because they're frustrated or because they're want to get to the other dog to say hi and greet it, but they can't.
Mm-hmm.
Now, frustration can ramp up into aggression, as we all know. Anybody who's heard the line, I went to a fight and a hockey game broke out.
Yeah, really.
That was what we're talking about here. We humans can do the same thing. But, you know, sometimes dogs are fearful and would never actually aggress, never be on offensive aggression and bite at another dog.
Mm-hmm.
Some dogs are overly excited. Some dogs are frustrated. Some dogs truly have become such that if they had access to another dog, they would cause injury in some way. So,
mm-hmm.
So aggressive is a small, is a subcategory of reactive. But
oh.
Either way, you know, if your dog is reactive, I mean, they can be barking and lunging. That's sort of the hardest to deal with logistically, because it's just, you know, there you are standing
mm-hmm.
there in the street with your dog going crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also see dogs who are passively fearful, who sort of run behind your legs and hide and are just terrified when they see another dog and want to run back to the house. So
mm-hmm.
reactive is a big range of problems, basically, that mean there's something that's indicates discomfort and a kind of a dysfunctional comfort when your dog sees another dog.
Right. So can you let us know what are some of the causes to make dogs be this way? I mean, what is it? Is it, are they predisposed to this the day that they're born? Or does this happen, does this occur like with your puppy possibly while he's with his own litter? What are the reasons that we have dogs like this?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and I think it's actually rare to see it that young. I can't remember a client I ever saw who had a dog as pathological as my Willie
wow.
was when he was a puppy. But it is very common, and I think there are a couple of reasons why, and some of them are actually good in a way, or at least it's a side effect of something that is good, which is that we're getting our dogs out and about more, which
right.
is great,
right.
you know, going to dog parks. A lot of people are really good about walking their dogs in the neighborhood, going to agility, going to classes. That's all great. I think a lot of the cause of it is that the way we humans greet other humans and the way we design our space is set up for the way we appropriately greet members of our own species, which is head-to-head, face-to-face, right? You know,
mm-hmm.
look right in somebody's eyes, say hi, walk down a straight sidewalk that forces you to walk straight towards another individual walking towards you. That's polite in our society, and it's the opposite in dog society. Walking head-on, straight-on, face-to-face to another dog is something no dog would ever do. But
mm-hmm.
when they're on leash on a sidewalk, we force them into that.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of it, is that we're because they're on leash so much, and obviously they can't be off leash running around in a suburban neighborhood. That's not safe.
No, not in America.
You know, yeah,
yeah.
It's not.
Yeah.
So they don't have a lot of freedom. They're sort of trapped. And you know, you think about it. You're walking down the sidewalk, and you see a person and a dog walking towards you. Again, that is a setup for an inappropriate and potentially aggressive interaction between two dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Two dogs, if allowed to greet themselves, would arc in semicircles, would come around to the side, would not make face-to-face, eye-to-eye, head-to-head contact, would investigate each other's urine, you know, would avoid that kind of face-to-face. So I think that's part of it. I
mm-hmm.
think the other part is that because they're on leash, they just get frustrated. They want to run toward another dog, and they can't.
Right.
And so they start getting more and more aroused. And as we were saying earlier, over-arousal sometimes just leads to, you know, you sort of lose control, and it turns into a fight.
Right, right.
So I think that's a lot of what's going on. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
you don't really think about it. It doesn't
yeah.
make any sense. But when you start thinking about it from a dog's viewpoint, it's like, well, of course they are.
Yeah. You know, I'm sure you've gotten many, many clients with this type of complaint. I know I have. You know, many times our dogs are out on the leash and they're heading toward the dog park, or they're being walked on the leash and the owner feels like, okay, the dog's all excited. He wants to go play with this other dog. And then if they let go of the leash for some reason, which I certainly wouldn't advise, but once the leash is dragging or the dog isn't wearing a leash, the dog is fine, you know, and then they pick up the leash and then all the, this happens a lot in daycares too, I have to tell you. You know, dogs will be playing all day with other dogs and then they're brought out into the lobby. And their owner is there, and the dog is all excited to greet the owner. The dog is now on the leash. And another dog that they've been playing with all day comes out into the same lobby, and there's a huge fight. So the leash, it seems to be the trigger. And I have learned over time that a tight leash, you're asking for trouble. So what do you think about that?
Oh, I couldn't agree more. And for people listening, Renee's experience and is exactly in line with my experience and the experience of certified applied behaviorists and professional trainers all over the country. There are so many dogs who are really fine off-leash and not on-leash. And I think part of what happens relates to what I was talking about before, but I think there's a can be a conditioned association with a leash. You know, say a dog has a standard leash and collar system on. He sees another dog, he tries to get friendly, right, tries to get to the other dog and can't, and gets this sort of correction. You don't mean to do it, but basically self-corrects himself, sort of gets hit by the collar because he gets to the end of the leash, and he starts associating seeing other dogs with that feeling of, I hate that, I don't like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that increases arousal, it's a negative association, and I think dogs become, in a Pavlovian sense, classically conditioned.
Mm-hmm.
And they also, again, when they're off-leash, they're free. They're free to move the way they want to. When they're on-leash, they're trapped.
Right.
And we know with humans, when people are trapped, they behave, they're much more likely to be sort of defensively aggressive than
mm-hmm.
if they're not.
Mm-hmm.
So I absolutely, Renee, you're dead on with my experience and that of so many other people. And that's why when Karen and I talk about introducing, in some of our books that I've written with Karen London, we talk about introducing dogs to other dogs. For example, in the Love Has No Age Limit book, we talk about if you're adopting a dog, say, from a shelter, and you bring it in, you have another dog, it's critical when you introduce them, if you've had evidence both dogs are good with other dogs, do it in a fenced area off-leash, or at least keep the leashes loose, because you're so right, that tight leash conveys so much tension and can create so much tension. So I couldn't agree with you more.
If
at all possible, no leashes. And if leashes are necessary for safety's sake, then loose leashes.
Right. Another thing that I'm sure you know you've had experience with is when you do puppy classes, when you take your dog, your puppy at a young age to a puppy kindergarten, and if that is a positive class, and if they do off-leash play, that can be very, very good for the dog to learn how to appropriately approach another dog, how to behave and how to play, and then get a little time out if they get a little too rough and things like that. So early learning experiences, I do believe, has a great deal to do with how the dog is going to behave once he's an adolescent and an adult.
I agree completely, especially, as you mentioned, classes that are very carefully monitored.
Yeah.
And there's no mosh pit experience. There
right.
are no puppies getting terrorized by
right.
other dogs,
right.
you know. So it's, and I think that kind of monitoring is really important in puppy classes, and the good ones, you know, they have a lot of instructors or at least volunteers there for the number of puppies. And
mm-hmm.
so the well-monitored classes are so valuable because so many of our dogs don't get much experience off-leash.
Right, absolutely.
And I think, you know, just like kids, I've been reading a bit about development in kids and how so few children now have times in their lives where they're just like playing outside.
I know, they're on the computer or they're playing with their video games.
Or they're in classes. You know, mm-hmm. they're in swimming class and they're in soccer class and they're in this class, but they don't have an entire afternoon to just
socialize.
do whatever and socialize, exactly. So yeah. I think you're absolutely right that puppies need that too.
Right. Listen, I want to tell our listeners that if you have a question that you'd like to ask Dr. McConnell about, if you have a dog that shows this kind of behavior, we want you to call us if you're there. If you're not driving, be careful. Our number is 856-227-1360. Let me repeat that. That's 856-227-1360. 1360, and I can promise you that if you have a dog that you have a question about, Dr. McConnell is like the person that you want to ask. So we have these dogs. I'm sure you see it when you take dogs for a walk. I see it with my own clients. It's out there, and it's not, unfortunately, all that uncommon. So what course of action can people take to help their dog get over this and to help the human handle the dog better?
Well, there are a couple of things that make a huge difference. One is prevention and management, and most people who have dogs who are reactive get pretty good at this, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
But I don't want them to feel guilty about it. I've seen so many clients, Renee, I'll bet you have too, who said, oh, I feel so guilty, you know, when I see another dog, I turn and I walk the other way. You know what, for a while,
mm-hmm.
until you have some more tools under your belt, that's okay. It's
mm-hmm.
fine. Don't force dogs into situations in which they're out of their own control, much less your own.
Right.
So that's one. But while you're doing that, you want to start teaching your dog an alternate behavior, an incompatible behavior that's closer to what you do want. So one of the things to do is an operant conditioning paradigm where all you do is away from other dogs, away from distractions at first, you simply teach your dog to turn and look at your face
mm-hmm.
when you give them a cue. I say watch.
Mm-hmm.
So watch.
Mm-hmm.
Karen and I talk about this in the Feisty Fido booklet. You say watch. Dog turns and looks at you. Sometimes you need to prompt them a little bit, give a little click, or lure them around with a piece of food. And then as soon as they start to turn their head, don't wait for the full turn to start. At the beginning of a head turn, you go yes or click or good, give them a treat, and so get them so that they've mastered without distractions. When you say watch, they turn and look at you.
Mm-hmm.
And gradually over time, you start asking them to do that when they're distracted, being really good about reinforcing on a really, really great schedule so they love doing it, and then you start, you don't use this on dogs at first, you do your prevention first.
Mm-hmm.
But once they've really mastered it with some non-dog related distractions, then you start asking them to do it with dogs and try and set it up so you have control over the other dog. You know, maybe you just, what I did with Willie actually is
mm-hmm.
I would drive to a park where a lot of people took their dogs and we just sat in the car.
Oh, excellent.
That meant I could control the distance between him and the other dog.
Right.
He'd look out the window, he'd see a dog, I'd say, watch, he'd turn his head, I'd give him like a piece of chicken, like great treats.
Right.
You can go to a, you know, maybe in the neighborhood there's a dog behind a fence always, you know, where you start a block away
right.
when the dog first looks in that direction. And
right.
your goal is to teach not having the dog turn and look at you when every time you say watch. The goal is actually an auto watch, such that if you repeat this over and over again, same dog, you know, watch, turns and looks at you, then turns and looks back at the dog, you say watch again, turns and looks at you, gets the treat, looks back at the dog, you do that 5 times in a row, usually times 6 or 7, the dog will anticipate that you're going to say watch and turn and look at you without you saying anything.
Mm-hmm.
That's an auto watch, and that gets 10 treats because that's what you want.
Right.
What your goal is, the dog is going to learn, when I see another dog, I'm going to automatically, without her or him saying anything, I'm going to turn and look at my human. And I'm going to be so happy I did.
Right. Now.
Add on to that by backing away from the other dog.
Right.
Or making that part of the repertoire. If your dog is afraid of other dogs, teach them that what gets them to get away from that other dog is to turn away from that dog, and then you'll back away, they look at you, you give them a treat, and basically they get more and more comfortable seeing other dogs. It's a very, very, it takes some work, you
yeah,
know?
Absolutely.
Not magic,
mm-hmm. in
that it doesn't happen automatically, and usually the biggest problems that people run into when they try that kind of method is
mm-hmm.
that they go too far too fast,
mm-hmm.
and then it all falls apart. All of a sudden there's a dog 2 feet away from them, and their dog is barking and lunging, and they said, well, I said watch, but it didn't work.
Yeah.
Well, your dog's just, you know, that's too intense, it's too hard, it's like trying to, I don't know, play a difficult piano piece at a conference or a competition when you haven't practiced it enough yet.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Right.
So working on that middle stage, staying far enough away from the dog that your dog can manage his or her own emotions is the important part.
Right. And so are there other methods that you can use? Lately, there's a method that's been talked a lot about over the last year, year and a half, and that's called BAT, B-A-T, Behavior Adjustment Training. Have you heard of that?
Oh, I have. And actually, when I was talking about one of the things you can do is when the dog's head starts to turn away from the other dog, you can back away. You and your dog move away. That's actually BAT.
Mm-hmm.
BAT is a name for basically reinforcing your dog for not necessarily doing something on cue, but on his or her own. You say, turns the head to the side, looks down at the ground, rather than barking and lunging and staring at the other dog. You have to be sure, in all of these methods, you have to be sure to get the dog so they're just at the threshold of reactivity,
mm-hmm.
not over it. So they can see another dog, but the other dog is far enough away. Maybe it's just sitting quietly. Often helps to enroll some friends in this who have nice, well-behaved dogs.
Yeah.
To tell them, you sit by the oak tree.
Yeah,
don't
be a decoy.
Come any closer.
Right, sure. Now I had a question that just went right out of my head. Isn't that awful? So isn't this a way of kind of teaching the dog how he can control his environment better so he's not feeling like he's hanging out on a limb just trying to survive? We're teaching him skills to be able to use to control what happens with that other dog. Is that correct?
That's a very good way of explaining it. And basically, going back to that point that dogs on leash are trapped and don't have a lot of control over their own behavior,
mm-hmm.
all of these methods are basically teaching dogs that if you choose an incompatible behavior with what you were doing that we defined as a problem,
right.
and good things will happen. And so it is absolutely a way of empowering dogs, to use a current catchphrase.
Right.
And those usually are methods that absolutely are the most successful. The worst thing you can do, in my experience, is to say you have a dog who barks and lunges, and looks really awful, and the owner jerks on the leash and says, no, cut that out,
mm-hmm.
and gets upset and angry, perhaps, quote, tries to get dominance over their dog by being really gruff. In my experience, that tends to either make the behavior much worse,
right.
or causes the dog to redirect on the owner, which I've seen happen way too many times.
Wow.
Or shuts down the barking and lunging, but does not change the internal affect of the dog, the internal emotions of the dog, doesn't change the motivation,
mm-hmm.
such that the dog stops giving warning signals,
mm-hmm.
and then when they are close enough to that other dog, bam, they go right to biting. So
mm-hmm.
I have just not seen that method be particularly useful, especially when dogs are doing whatever they're doing because they're fearful. You know, you can't cure fear by... You can't cure fear by doing something that scares an animal even more.
Absolutely. Patricia, we have a caller. Can you just hold on just a second? I'd like to find out who our caller is. Hi, this is Renee. You're on Thursday in the Doghouse. What is your name?
Jill.
What is it?
Jill.
Jill, hi. Thank you so much for calling. Do you have a question for Dr. McConnell?
I do.
Go ahead, darling.
I'm hearing what you're saying, and I think it sounds really wonderful to as far as prevention and management, but how do you get to the point where the dog is actually being socialized? Because what seems to be happening is they're not getting socialized.
Well, it's very possible that the reason they are reactive is because they were not socialized young enough. Dr. McConnell?
Yeah, I hear you loud and clear. It's sort of the vicious circle, isn't it?
Yeah.
Basically, what you have to do is, and I'll just tell you what I did with Willie, is first I went very slowly. I slowly got him used to seeing another dog a block away, such that when I said, watch, or hopefully he did it on his own, he'd look at me, we'd play a game of tug, it was really fun. Excuse me. Then I began working closer and closer and closer with dogs that I knew were friendly. Then we began working with a gate in between them, and think when things look really good, then we let them out in an open area. Sorry. Then we let them out in an open area, but I still had my watch cue, so I would let the dogs greet for very short periods of time, like just a second.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say, watch, and Willie would turn his head, and I'd throw the ball for him. And so I avoided those sort of tense greeting encounters. So you gradually, slowly let dogs spend more and more time together. A parallel walking is a really good idea. First you play the bat or the watch game, and then you just take them on walks. You know, let dogs be dogs. Take them on walks together,
mm-hmm.
Where they're about, you know, far enough apart, they're on leash, and they're far enough apart
yeah.
where they can not interact necessarily. If at all possible and it's safe, take them on. Dogs do so much better off-leash on walks, like in the country, where they can be dogs, and they
mm-hmm.
can interact by sniffing the same track of the chipmunk or something. So it's can be a lengthy process, but it's very often very, very successful.
Jill,
I see Fido classes can help, too. If there's a class in your area, sometimes that can be very, very helpful to
mm-hmm.
have a class with small number of dogs who have the same issues.
Jill, tell us a little bit about your dog so that we know what you're dealing with, if anything.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that. How old is your dog now, and at what stage are you now?
Oh,
well,
are you talking to Dr. McConnell?
Yeah,
he's 5, and I would say he's as done as he's going to be. I would never take him, I wouldn't take him to a dog park. He would be uncomfortable. But, when he's walking down the street, if he sees another dog, he's all loose and happy. He might look at me, his body is happy, he wants to greet the other dog. He has a lot of dog friends, he plays with lots of other dogs. So is he a dog who you could take anywhere and let anything happen to? No.
Mm-hmm.
But is he a happy dog who's totally functional, great in the vet clinic, great out and about, wants to meet other dogs? Yes.
Okay.
Jill, I hope that we've answered your question okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, and so he's 5 now and you got him that way as a puppy. So how long did that take you, like, initially?
Yeah, it's a very good question. As often happens, he was doing really, really well. We were working on, at the time, just watch. And then at 6 months, he was attacked by another dog and was really, really traumatized by it. That had a setback. Then he injured his shoulder. You know, we all know these stories, right?
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
So it took me about another, I would say the big turnaround was when he was about a year and a half old, when he was between 2 and 3 is when I really was able to start relaxing, and you could take him out walking, and he'd be happy to see another dog rather than nervous about it. But he was one of the worst dogs I've seen in 23 years.
So you can see it's a slow process. It doesn't happen overnight.
Especially if they're that bad. I've seen dogs who had this problem who you could turn around literally in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
That's as uncommon as Willie is, but you know, it's very often maybe a dog who's moderately problematic. It could be 3 to 6 months.
Mm-hmm. Jill, thank you very much for calling, and I hope that we answered your Dr. Patricia McConnell answered your question, and we're going to talk about her new book, and we'll give you information where you can get more information about Dr. McConnell and her books. So thank you very much for calling.
Thank you.
Take care. Patricia, okay. Can you tell us a little bit about your new book and where people can get it?
Absolutely. They can get it at, lots of places, but at my website, certainly, and that's just my name, patriciamcconnell.com. I also have a blog that's really fun for me.
Great
anyway,
blog.
An interactive blog about training, behavior, and relationships at theotherendoftheleash.com.
Okay.
But the book, Love Has No Age Limit, that I wrote with Dr. Karen London, is a book with two goals. It's one, to increase adoptions of dogs from shelters and rescue groups.
Right. Right.
But as importantly, it's to increase successful adoptions from shelters and rescue groups, because as we all know, sometimes it's just, you know, the dog, literally in 3 days, it's like the dog always lived there, and it's the perfect dog for the household, and,
mm-hmm.
and you know, you and I as trainers, right, we have nothing to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there are other times where things don't go quite as smoothly, and what Karen and I have learned is that that's partly due to the expectations people have. So we've written a book that goes through basically the first month, starts with preparation, goes through the ride home, how to introduce your new dog to the other dogs, to your family, to the cat, what kind of expectations you should have, some advice about training, and then the last half of the book is about behavioral problems that are most common when you're adopting adolescent or older dogs, mm-hmm. and summaries of how to deal with them, and then lots of resources if you need to go further.
Will you come back again soon and talk more about shelter and rescue dogs, and we can talk more about your book then?
Oh, absolutely. Be my pleasure.
I would love to have you back, and I need to thank you very much for visiting with us today, and I hope that we'll be in touch soon.
Great. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. You too. Take care now. I want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in today. I hope that this was beneficial for you. I know it was for me. I hope that you'll listen in again next week on WNJC 1360 AM. I hope Karen will be joining us again next week, and I pray for her father. And thanks again, and I hope you all have a wonderful, wonderful week with your own dogs. It's beautiful today. Get out and take them for a walk.